I'm speaking today with Ted Ankrum, who is running for Congress in District 10. Ted, first question I'd like to ask is, why are you running for this office?
Well, I'm running for it a second time. The first time I ran against the same person, Michael McCaul, because I was very upset with his rubber stamp endorsement of the Iraq War, which I thought was a foolish thing to be doing. He really, and frankly, because he had no record, McCaul, it was his first time up for re-election, I really ran against George Bush more than I ran against Michael McCaul. I sat out the 08 election because the Democrats had taken over Congress, and there wasn't anything I could add to that. In 2010, the guy who we all hoped was going to run against Michael McCaul dropped out 2 weeks before filing deadline, and I was persuaded by people in Austin to go and run again, and I felt like it was something that should be done because now McCaul has a record, and it's a terrible record. So I'm running because Mike McCaul has been a lousy congressman.
Okay. As you said, you did run in 2006. What would you say you learned from that experience?
I learned a whole lot. First of all, I met a lot of people. A first-time candidate has to spend a lot of time meeting the activists, meeting the movers and shakers, meeting the people that that can give you advice, meeting the people that can introduce you to other people. And you don't have as much time then to get out and meet the voters. You also have to spend a lot of time raising funds. I did that in 06. And Larry Joe had to start all over again when he ran in 08. This time, I've got a base of people that know me. I've got a base of people that I know. And so it's a lot easier than it was before. I also have learned what are the important things that I have to do and what are the things that I don't have to do. And since this is a pretty low-funded campaign, as it was in 06, it's all volunteer. Nobody gets a salary. But there are lots and lots of people working. I know what it is that they should be working on.
Okay. You know, when you ran in 06, as you said, you know, Bush was president. You were more or less running against him. Democrats were the minority in Congress, hoping to become the majority. Now, as you run in 2010, they're the majority, hoping not to become the minority. How does that, you know, and of course we have a Democratic president. How does that change your approach, or does it?
Well, you know, absolutely it changes. And I was running against the president in 06. I was running against a sitting president. This time I'm running against a sitting congressman. I'm running against an incumbent who is the sixth richest member of the House of Representatives, who has voted lock stock for the big corporations, for the big banks. He's voted against the interests of the people in this district. I mean, I haven't seen any big banks anywhere in this district, and I haven't seen any big manufacturers anywhere in this district. And he's just dropped the ball for the district voting lockstep for a Republican leadership doing whatever they tell him to do. He is rated by one of the blogs as a follower in Congress, and by that they say he co-sponsors other people's bills and nobody co-sponsors his. His sole legislative accomplishment in three terms of Congress has been a resolution in the House to name a post office after one of our fallen heroes. That's a gimme for the sitting representative in that district. That's his sole legislative accomplishment. So it's very different. This time I'm running against him. It's easy.
Okay. I mean, the economy is, you know, the dominating factor in this electoral climate. You know, what would Congressman Ankrum want to do about the economy when he gets to office next January?
Well, you know, let's ignore the economists for a little while and apply a little bit of Main Street wisdom. What McCaul, my opponent, wants to do is essentially what Herbert Hoover did to turn the 1929 stock market crash and the 1929 recession into the Great Depression, and that is balance the budget. This is a dumb time to balance the budget. You know, we didn't get out of the Great Depression until World War II started, and we started doing deficit spending. And you ask yourself right now, gee, we're doing lots of deficit spending. Why isn't it working? And the answer is, when we spent money in World War II, when a tank was blown up in Europe or when a ship was sunk in the Pacific, that steel was made in the United States. The workers that made the replacement tank and made the replacement ship were American workers, so that the deficit spending was being spent here in the United States. If you look at the two wars we've been fighting over these last 8 years, you'll discover that huge numbers of the people that we've been spending money on are support services contractors, and they're local nationals. We're spending money, hundreds of millions of dollars, in Iraq and in Afghanistan, building facilities for people that can't operate them after they're finished, and we have to hire support services contractors, again from countries like Turkey or Pakistan, to run these things, and these dollars are not being spent in the United States. So we've got all kinds of deficit spending going, and it's not being spent in the United States. So although I'm in favor of deficit spending, I think we ought to be spending it on things like bridges and roads and sewer systems and water systems in this country. I mean, if we're going to nation build, let's build in this nation where we can really use it.
Okay. If we're going to talk deficits, spending is only half the equation. The other side of the equation is taxes. And as we speak today, there's a discussion about the Bush tax cuts, which are set to expire, which would primarily raise tax rates to their previous levels on people making $250,000 a year or more. What is your stance on that?
Anybody who says that we can balance the budget with just cutting spending is lying to you. We're going to have to increase taxes, and we're going to have to cut spending. We're going to have to do both. And so I am with the president on this particular issue. I don't agree with him on what he's doing in Afghanistan, but on the tax cuts, I do. I think we should extend the tax cuts for the middle class, and I think that the upper income people have been doing extraordinarily well over the last few years, and I think it's time that they pay their fair share. They benefit from a wonderful country with a wonderful system of government for us, and it behooves them to pay some of the things that other people can't. Let me give you a for instance. 83% of the stocks are owned by 1% of the population in this country. 66% of income growth from 2001 to 2007 went to the top 1% of the population of this country. Banks own a greater share of our residential real estate net worth than all of the other Americans put together. In 1950, the average executive paycheck was 30 times greater than that of the average worker. In the year since 2000, the ratio is now 300 to 500 to 1. Now, these are people that have done extremely well, and it's time for them to contribute to getting this country's deficit under control.
Okay. Since you mentioned Afghanistan and that you disagree with the president's approach, tell me more about what you would like to see done in Afghanistan.
Well, I want to win in Afghanistan. But
defining that is the hard part, isn't it?
No, defining that's quite easy. I think it's pretty clear what winning in Afghanistan is. Winning means it's not a base for terrorists to launch attacks against the United States. That's what winning in Afghanistan is. If you think that we're going to have to establish a democratically elected, stable government with the support of the population in Afghanistan before we win, then I don't know when we're ever going to be able to leave, and I don't think that ought to be our objective. Objective is very simple. It's Afghanistan is not used as a base for attacks against the American homeland. Now, I think we can achieve that a lot more simply than we're than what we're doing right now. First of all, I think we've got to negotiate with the Taliban. The Taliban are an indigenous group. The Taliban are not Al-Qaeda. There are, according to a very accurate estimates of our intelligence community, less than 100 members of Al-Qaeda actually in Afghanistan. What there are hiding out in Pakistan that cross over into Afghanistan to attack U.S. troops. The Taliban are a native indigenous group. They're Afghans. They've been running the country in pretty much the same way since the time of Alexander the Great. We're not going to change that very soon. I think we do a deal with the Taliban. We tell them, we'll leave. We'll leave as long as you don't allow Al-Qaeda to come back in and use Afghanistan as a base for attacks against the United States. And if you do, we'll be back at an altitude of 30,000 feet, and we won't be too concerned about civilian casualties. Now, you might ask, why would the Taliban agree to this? And there are two reasons I think that they would agree with it. First of all, our special forces and our predator forces are being very successful these days in killing mid-level Taliban leaders. They've been very successful at that. And so their lives are at risk. Now, Osama bin Laden is not in Afghanistan. He's probably in Pakistan, and he's probably being protected by the Pakistan intelligence service. We don't have very many friends in that part of the world. The second reason why I think the Taliban might agree to it is that we've now established that there are immense mineral resources in Afghanistan, and those are never going to be developed while there's a war going on. So I think the Taliban will have a very good incentive to negotiate with us. I mean, the negotiation to begin with will be some kind of a joint government between the current government and the Taliban, but we all know that it won't be too much longer before the Taliban manage to kick all those crooks out. And I think that that's doable. I just don't see us trying to turn Afghanistan into a representative democracy that's defending Western interests. It's not in their interest to do that, and that's why we're going to be fighting forever if that's our goal.
Okay. Let's shift back to more local concerns. I guess the big news recently in your district was the contract that was taken away from BAE Systems to build army vehicles. As it had been maintained there in Sealy for a number of years, but in the most recent round of bidding, it was lost to a company in Wisconsin. A number of Texas politicians tried to get the Army to reverse its decision, but it was ultimately unsuccessful. What criticism would you offer of Congressman McCaul's approach to protecting that contract?
Well, he was asleep at the switch. You know, I worked in the federal government for a number of years, and I've been part of letting some fairly large contracts be awarded when I was at NASA, and I spent 2 years at the Pentagon as a colonel level official working on these kinds of issues. Now, if you wait until after the contract is awarded, it's too late. Unless you can show that there was something wrong with the bidding, then it's too late. And so what Congressman McCaul should have done is be aware that the contract was even up for renewal. I don't think he even knew it was up for renewal. And I think the British aerospace people in Sealy, who were submitting the bid, had gotten fat, dumb, and happy over the past 8 years when they were depending on a Republican administration supporting a Republican congressman. And a company in Wisconsin, Oshkosh, who make a very good truck, and a tactical truck that the troops absolutely love, submitted a bid that was 25% cheaper than British Aerospace. You're not going to turn that around. Now, Congressman McCaul should have known that this procurement was up. Congressman McCaul could have had his ear to the ground as to what was happening. Congressman McCaul should have been over kicking the British aerospace people in the butt, telling them to wake up that there's real competition on the map this time. He didn't. He was just sitting there doing nothing. The British aerospace management was doing business as usual, and business changed when we changed the management of our government. The automatic renewal of contracts wasn't going to continue, particularly when a good contractor with a good truck undercut British aerospace by 25%. Now, there's another contract underway right now. The Army is going to advertise for another tactical truck. And I hope that Congressman McCaul is working closely with the British aerospace people and is keeping his ear to the ground on what's happening in Washington. And let me tell you, you can do that as a congressman. You can keep informed about what's going on if you're interested enough to do it. I hope he's doing it, because 3,000 jobs are going out the door by the end of the year in Sealy, 3,000 direct jobs, and another 2,000 indirect jobs on top of that. We can ill afford to lose that number of jobs. It's going to really kill parts of Old Katy, Austin County, parts of Washington County, parts of Waller County.
Okay. Talking about this, since these are essentially, in a sense, government-provided jobs. I mean, without the government contract, those jobs don't exist. There's been a larger debate over the past year and a half, 2 years, about the role of, especially the role of the federal government versus the state government in, you know, state affairs. A lot of Texas politicians in particular, Texas Republican politicians, have taken an extreme, hands-off view of the role of the federal government. What's your take on this?
I believe in a limited government. I believe in a government that only does the things that we as citizens cannot do for ourselves. Now, none of us can go to the food plants and inspect for food safety. And yet, more Americans have died from food poisoning in the last year than in all the years that our troops have been in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, only the federal government can do that, because these things cross state lines. We import food from countries all over the world. Only the federal government can inspect nuclear power plants for safety. Only the federal government can make sure that our drugs are safe. But there are other things that should be done at the state level. Our electricity regulation is done at the state level. There are things that should be done by us as individuals, but none of us are going to go out and build a road. None of us are going to go out and build a bridge. These are all things that the government has to do, some state, some federal.
The big legislative accomplishment for Congress in 2009 was the health care reform bill, which Republicans have said that they would like to repeal. Democrats have considered this to be a starting point and want to make modifications and extensions to it. What do you want to see done with the Affordable Care Act going forward?
In 2006, I ran on a third-party system, Medicare for All, and I still believe that that's the best system. I've seen medical systems in France when I lived there. I've seen them in Germany when I lived there. I've seen them in Australia when I lived there. I've seen what works and what doesn't work. And so I believe that ultimately we should be moving to a third-party payer system. And particularly we need to do that to get the cost of health care off the backs of our companies. Right now, because of an accident of World War II, health care is provided through our companies. We had wage controls in World War II, and there was a labor shortage. So companies competed for workers with fringe benefits, and that was the beginning of company-provided health care. We're about the only country in the world that does that. And what it means is, now that we're competing in a world market, we're at a disadvantage. Detroit says that $2,000 of the cost of every car they sell in this country pays for their workers' health care benefits. Now, when Toyota builds a car in Japan, they're not paying that extra $2,000. And when we so we're going to have to eventually move away from this system of having our companies we work for pay for our health insurance if we're going to compete in the world. So I think that's the direction we should be moving. And Mr. McCall, my opponent, is one of the people that are saying we should repeal the Health Care Act. Now, in Harris County, where you and I live, $500 million of our property taxes went to the Harris County Hospital District last year. Now, one-third of that paid for people who are not here legally. And that can't change because the Republicans objected to illegal aliens being able to buy health insurance. But that other two-thirds went for people who are now going to be able to buy affordable health insurance. Does Mr. McCall think we should continue to pay the hospital bills of those people? When my wife retired, she was director of benefits for one of the Blue Cross Blue Shield health insurance plans. And she, in that time, it was a nonprofit. Their loss ratio, and that's what insurance companies call when they pay a benefit, when they pay a doctor's bill, they call that a loss. Their loss ratio was 97%. That is to say, 97% of the money they came in, they paid out in people's health bills, and only 3% went to overhead. This new health care bill says that companies must pay at least 80% of their premium income in paying people's health bills. Now, why is that? Well, because companies like United Healthcare are paying only slightly more than 50% of the income that they get from premiums on paying people's bills in some of the United Healthcare plans. This is wrong. This is wrong. Does he want to go back to letting people like the chairman of the board of United Healthcare be voted another $1 billion bonus because of the profits he's generating on the backs of people that pay premiums and don't have their health bills paid? Does he want to repeal the part that says people with pre-existing conditions can't buy health insurance? Yeah, I'm willing to take him on
in
the debate on that any day.
Okay. Since you mentioned undocumented immigrants in that previous answer, Congress is maybe going to do some kind of comprehensive immigration reform, if not this year, then next. What would you like to see that accomplish?
Well, I'm against illegal immigration. Everybody's against illegal immigration. So we've got to secure the borders. We've really got to secure the borders. And we also have to ensure that our employers are not taking advantage of people who are not here legally, ripping them off with low wages or not paying their wages at all because of their illegal status. And the way to do that is we need a secure Social Security card so that an employer can be put in jail if they hire people that are not legally here. Now, there are, at some estimate, 12 million people here illegally. That's after Ronald Reagan did an amnesty, and Ronald Reagan is the one that did the last amnesty, but then failed to secure the border afterwards. Now, those 12 million people that are here, roughly half of them came across the border from the south. And the other half came here on airplanes and overstayed a visa. Now, if you think that we are going to be able to round up 12 million people and deport them without building concentration camps, you're wrong. And I'm not going to be part of that. So I think we have to come up with a system in which we find a legal way to deal with these 12 million people and get them out of the black market. It's hurting the economy. to have people who were not paying taxes, having people who were being taken advantage of, and I'm sad that they got they were able to come here illegally, but they're here. Now we have to deal with them. We also have to make sure more don't come.
Okay. And just to wrap things up, when people go to the polls in November and they vote in this race, why should they vote for you and not for Congressman McCaul?
They should vote for me because I have the interests of the average person in this district in mind. He has voted for rich people. He's voted for the big banks. He's voted for the big companies that have been ripping us off. I'm going to go there and work for the average people in this district. Mr. McCaul has been doing nothing but acting as a mouthpiece for the Republican leadership and for the people that have been running this country into the ground over the last 8 years.
All right. Ted Ackerman, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
You're welcome.